This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Big finish, a late week rally wipes out a midweek tumble in what may turn out to be a week to remember on Wall Street. Global shift, the president heads overseas with an ambitious agenda, and there are a few reasons why investors will be watching what happens. All wet, why Californians are using less water but paying higher bills. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Friday, May 19th. Good evening, everyone, and welcome. I'm Sue Herrera. Tyler Matheson is off tonight. What a week on Wall Street. At least that's what it felt like. A rally capped what seemed like an intense few days. By midweek, the drama in Washington spilled over onto Wall Street, but the major indexes climbed their way back. Today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average advanced 141 points to 20,804. The NASDAQ was up 28, and the S&P 500 gained 16. For all of the week's dramatic ups and downs, the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P 500 were off just fractionally. Dominic Chu has more on the week that was on Wall Street and why it wasn't that bad.
The week didn't start off with any real fireworks, but by the time Wednesday morning came around, there was a feeling like we might actually see that long-awaited pullback for stocks that's been absent for so long. Wall Street had been shaking off the headlines out of Washington for weeks and even months, but the possibility of interference by the White House in an active FBI investigation was enough to rattle things at least a little bit. That was enough to push stocks down on Wednesday by the most in around 8 months, certainly the most in 2017, and put a real end to that run of calm and steady markets over the last few months. In the end, though, it was just another small blip on the market's radar. Gains posted by stocks on Thursday and Friday returned major indices to just fractional losses on the week overall. On a sector basis, the relative winners for the week were the S&P 500 real estate sector, also consumer staples and utilities, each of those considered perhaps more defensive in nature, less economically sensitive than others. The relative losers in the S&P 500 included high-profile stocks in the technology and financial sectors. Oil, also a big focus for traders this week, as West Texas Intermediate crude prices topped $50 a barrel for the first time in over 3 weeks. Now, that helped fuel a rise in energy-related stocks. Now, next week, we get another slate of big earnings reports, including retailers like Lowe's, Tiffany, and Williams-Sonoma. And on the economic report calendar, we're going to get data including new and existing home sales and durable goods as well. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Dominic Chu from the New York Stock Exchange.
Stocks pulled back just slightly late today on two new reports out of Washington. According to the Washington Post, a White House advisor close to the president is a person of interest in the Russia probe. And the New York Times reports that President Trump told Russian officials in the Oval Office that the firing of former FBI Director James Comey relieved, quote, pressure on him. The president also reportedly called Mr. Comey, quote, a nut job. In response to the Washington Post story, the White House says a thorough investigation will confirm that there was no collusion between the campaign and any foreign entity. And on the New York Times story, the administration says that by grandstanding and politicizing the investigation into Russia's actions, James Comey created unnecessary pressure on our ability to engage and negotiate with Russia. The other big stories for investors are taking place overseas. President Trump departed on his first foreign trip since becoming president. His 8-day visit starts in Saudi Arabia and continues in Israel. The president will then visit the Vatican and later attend the NATO summit in Brussels and the G7 summit in Italy. But the focus now is on the first stop in Saudi Arabia, a longtime U.S. ally. Hadley Gamble reports tonight from Riyadh.
U.S. President Donald Trump may be feeling the heat back at home, but here in Saudi Arabia, they are rolling out the red carpet. Ministers from the GCC countries, as well as leaders from other Muslim states, will be filing into Saudi Arabia to hear from the U.S. president, not just about multi-billion dollar trade deals, but also a speech to the Muslim world. President Trump is expected to address radical Islam and ways to combat it in a speech over the weekend. And many here in the Muslim world are very excited to hear just what the U.S. president has to offer. So what do the Saudis want? Well, they want a stronger U.S. hand when it comes to tackling Iran, not just in Syria and Iraq, but also in Bahrain and Yemen. And of course, they also want U.S. help when it comes to diversifying their economy away from oil. The swing factor, of course, remains oil when it comes to talks about security for Saudi Arabia. They'll tell you that Iran is the greatest threat to regional stability, but it's also all about oil prices. Lower oil prices do have an impact on Saudi Arabia's ability to fund economic relief in places like Egypt, as well as military intervention in Yemen. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Hadley Gamble in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
It is also expected that a massive arms deal will be announced during the president's trip. Morgan Brennan reports now on the likely size of that agreement and the American defense companies that could benefit.
The U.S. is poised to unveil one of the biggest arms deals ever. A flurry of agreements with Saudi Arabia expected to be announced tomorrow, while President Trump is visiting on his first trip abroad as commander-in-chief. The deal will likely be worth upwards of $100 billion, with the potential to grow to as much as $350 billion over the coming decade. It's a sum floated by senior White House officials this week, but one that, with oil at $50 a barrel, has been met with some skepticism.
A little bit of this is hype, but from the standpoint of the relationship, it's good hype. Obama sold him the weapons, but he appeared somewhat conflicted over it. Trump is embracing this with a big grin on his face, and that's what people want to see in the region right now.
Saudi Arabia is the biggest purchaser of U.S. arms. During his eight-year tenure, President Obama approved $115 billion in potential sales to the kingdom. But many of those were put on hold after Saudi Arabia invaded Yemen. Some of those may be resuscitated now, including deals for combat ships from Lockheed Martin and more tanks made by General Dynamics. Also expected, a commitment to buy an advanced missile defense system like the one currently being installed in South Korea. That's made by Lockheed with the help of Raytheon, which is run by CEO Tom Kennedy.
Missile defense is very important of any country's strategy today.
We've been recommending Raytheon, and we like it because Frankly, Mr. Kennedy has done a nice job of expanding the capability of his offerings in Saudi, among other places. And also, they have the premier air defense offering and probably the singular best radar capability in the world today.
Other agreements could involve more Patriot missiles and munitions. And according to one industry official familiar with the discussions, more combat vehicles from British contractor BAE Systems, manufactured stateside. Analysts say it speaks to the fact that global defense spending is increasing, the reason many contractors are reporting strong sales growth internationally. On the Saudi deal, the companies have all declined to comment. But ahead of the president's trip, the stocks did soar in trading today. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Morgan Brennan.
In Iran, voters are casting their ballots in the country's first presidential election since its nuclear deal with world powers. The election is seen as a referendum on more moderate policies. And as Seema Modi reports, the outcome could ripple through and potentially disrupt the energy and oil markets.
As the Iranians head to the polls, the president and his nuclear deal may be in trouble. Hassan Rouhani, who is seeking a second term, championed the 2015 nuclear deal with world leaders. The landmark pact removed key economic sanctions on Iran in exchange for limiting the country's uranium enrichment program. As a result, Iran's oil output is up by about 1 million barrels a day, and international oil producers like BP, Total, and Shell are looking to build out the country's infrastructure. But this could all change if opposition candidate Ebrahimi Raisi wins. Raisi, a conservative Muslim cleric, is a critic of the nuclear deal, saying it has not helped Iran's economy. While Iran has returned to growth, the country still suffers from stubbornly high unemployment. Further complicating matters is President Trump's visit to Saudi Arabia and Israel, two countries which view Iran as an enemy. Hard rhetoric exchanged between the leaders could intensify pressure on the current nuclear deal, potentially threatening Iran's role in the oil market.
If the reformist candidate wins in Iran, the existing president right now, President Rouhani, you should look for status quo, basically, in the price of oil. But if the conservative candidate wins, then that could be bullish for the price of oil. You could see the tightening of the supply literally hit the oil market in a very dramatic way.
That's why traders are watching this election so closely. For Nightly Business Report, Seema Modi.
Paul Christopher joins us now to discuss what the upcoming events on the president's overseas travel agenda could mean for the market next week. He is head of global market strategist at Wells Fargo Investment Institute. Welcome back, Paul. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Sue.
We want to talk about Saudi Arabia and NATO and the G7 conference, but these late stories that broke today from the New York Times and the Washington Post, do they have the ability to further diminish the president's ability to push his agenda through?
Possibly, but the markets don't seem too concerned about that right now. We would have to see some further evidence uncovered by an independent investigator. And most importantly of all, we would need to see Mr. Comey go before Congress and testify under oath that the White House interfered with his ongoing investigation. I think that could be a game changer as far as what investors think this administration and Congress might be able to achieve for stimulus in the coming term.
You also think that Saudi Arabia may be one of the most important stops that the president makes.
Yes, I do. Think of the Middle East as a place where there's not just been great instability, but a lot of jockeying for power. The Turks want to be the preeminent regional power. So do the Saudis. So do the Iranians. At times, even the Egyptians. And what they're looking for in the new president is someone who will take sides, especially someone who will take sides between the Arabs and the Iranians. There's a long-standing dispute, a religious dispute between them. There's cultural differences as well. They go back hundreds of years. President Obama seemed at one point to want to maybe disengage the U.S. and create more of a balance in the region. That's not what the leaders there are looking for from Mr. Trump.
What about NATO and the G7 summit in Sicily? Which of those two do you think has the potential to move the market, either positively or negatively?
They both have potential to move the markets, but probably the G7 meeting in Sicily is the more important of the two in the near term. I think NATO is very important in the longer term, even the medium term, for how NATO decides to structure itself in terms of who pays for what, and especially how NATO decides to deal with Russia in the longer term. But in this G7 summit, these governments, these leaders are mostly establishment leaders, and they need to figure out how they're going to counter the populist tendencies among their electorates. These populist tendencies have to do with slow growth, growth that's not very inclusive within the population, and growth that feels like globalization only benefits a few and not everyone. So they're going to have to figure that out. If they could come up with some stimulative policies or some commitment to stimulative policies, that could have some near-term positive market impact. If they fail to do so, that's not necessarily a negative. But if they come out of that meeting very acrimoniously, not being able to decide who's going to pay for what and not being able to decide what kinds of policies are important, that could be negative.
All right. We will take note. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sue.
Paul Christopher with Wells Fargo Investment Institute. Still ahead, looking for returns? Well, our market monitor has a list of stocks he says could rise double digits over the next year or so. Controversies swirling in Washington have not yet had an impact on the economy. That is according to the president of the St. Louis Fed. James Bullard today said that the markets should be ready for continued political volatility. He also said that gridlock on big policy issues is the norm in Washington. So if current events delay or stall major decisions, it won't change the current outlook. The Speaker of the House will send the health care overhaul bill to the Senate in just a couple of weeks. Paul Ryan said the delay was out of an abundance of caution until the Congressional Budget Office releases its analysis of the measure, including the legislation's cost and its impact on the health insurance coverage. That analysis, or score, is expected late Wednesday. And when asked if the score could force another vote in the House, Speaker Ryan said no. President Trump's 2018 budget proposal will aim to balance the budget in 10 years. To do so, it will rely on the assumption that annual economic growth will reach 3% by 2021, and it calls for a total of $54 billion in domestic spending cuts. The budget, which was being printed today, outlines cuts to Medicaid through Social Security, and Medicare benefits will not be touched. The full budget proposal will be released on Tuesday. As the rest of the country waits for the Trump administration to come out with its much-anticipated infrastructure plan, California has already passed a $52 billion transportation bill, and some districts have major infrastructure projects already in the works. But there may be a catch for the state's residents. Aditi Roy reports from Lafayette, California.
This is a five-year, $40 million program to improve 40 miles of pipeline carrying drinking water to residents of the East Bay near San Francisco. Officials say the renewed pipe network will be state-of-the-art.
Our job right now is to increase the rate of renewing that pipeline.
But for homeowners in the neighborhood, like R.J. Murray, there's a rub. The water district is raising rates to pay for more infrastructure projects like this. And that's not all. Part of the reason the East Bay Municipal Utility District is hiking fees is that during the California drought, urban area residents cut back on water use by more than 20%. That meant a decline in revenues for water districts throughout the state, and dozens of them have hiked rates to help pay for infrastructure. Murray, who even stopped watering his backyard during the drought, is skeptical of the more than 9% increase next year.
I don't think inflation's going up to that extent, so I think it'd be more fair and equitable if it stayed in pace with that.
But East Bay officials say their hands are tied, that like many water districts, their fixed costs are about 90% of their total costs, and revenues mostly come from water bills. With some infrastructure projects that were put on hold during the economic downturn nearly a decade ago, and rising water main breaks during the drought, they say the cost of waiting is just too high.
It is a pressing need. Our infrastructure is aging. It doesn't mean that it hasn't been maintained, but it does mean that the investments, the original investments in this infrastructure, were made generations ago. And now it's time for us to reinvest in that infrastructure.
Murray says he'll continue to save water because it's the right thing to do, even as he gets ready to pay more for it.
I'm uncomfortable with perhaps the amount that they're proposing, and I think they probably should put a sharper pencil to all that.
As workers continue to upgrade the infrastructure, the Association of Civil Engineers says in its latest report card that California will have $44 billion worth of infrastructure needs for its drinking water over the next 20 years. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Aditi Roy, Lafayette, California.
Shares of Foot Locker get trampled, and that's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The athletic footwear company said a delay in income tax refunds caused customers to spend less in the latest quarter, resulting in earnings and revenue that disappointed. Same-store sales edged up slightly, but they, too, fell short of expectations. The company said it's now focused on cutting costs so that it can improve its full-year performance. Shares got crushed. They fell more than 16% to $58.72. But sales turned positive for the first time in more than 3 years at the farm equipment giant Deere. The company said improving demand for its products also helped it post stronger than expected earnings. Deere also raised its profit outlook for the year. So shares popped 7% to $120.90. Campbell's Soup reported lower than expected sales and also cut its full-year revenue forecast. The food company said higher promotions and weak demand for its refrigerated drinks hurt its results. Profit was also a miss, but Campbell's raised its earnings forecast for 2017. The shares fell 2% to $55.78. Vistra Energy is reportedly in talks to buy its rival Dynegy. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. The discussions are said to be in the early stages, but a potential deal would create one of the nation's largest independent power producers. Dynegy shares soared 25% to $9.12, while Vistra Energy shares rose 1% to $15.04. And design software maker Autodesk reported a smaller-than-expected loss and revenue that beat estimates. The company, which is transitioning its business model from perpetual licensing to subscriptions, said the move was a good one.
The subscription model is essentially changing the game. The whole move to the cloud is changing how we deliver our software to our customers and how we engage with our customers. People who used to be users but not necessarily customers are now customers because it's just easier to access the software, and the model makes it easier to become a actual paying user.
Autodesk responded by moving up nearly 15% to $109.91. Our market monitor tonight likes all-weather stocks he said could rise 10 to 15% over the next year and a half. The last time he was on, in July, he recommended Disney, Microsoft, and Starbucks, all of which have risen. Joining us is John Traynor. He is the Chief Investment Officer at People's United Bank's Wealth Management. Nice to see you, John. Welcome back.
Good to see you.
And congratulations on those picks. They're doing well.
We're very pleased with them. We own them all, and we're very pleased.
Excellent. Let's get to your picks this time around. You say that you have some muted expectations for the market, so you're looking for a 10 to 15% return on your picks. That's a pretty good return for muted expectations.
For those three stocks, those are the expectations. For the overall market, we're probably in the high single digits. You've got, you know, sort of the Trump effect, as you've been discussing this evening, which we think will keep investors a little cautious, probably have a little extra cash in their portfolios. Mm-hmm. So we don't see the market really becoming extremely ebullient this year. So the overall market probably 8 to 10, and hopefully those stocks will outperform.
Well, let's get to them. TJX, retail has had a really tough week. Why do you like this particular stock?
We like this stock, and this is TJ Maxx. We like this stock in particular because it has a business model that can compete against the Amazon effect. A lot of your viewers have seen Amazon really devastate retailers across the board, the big department store retailers. TJ Maxx has a unique sales proposition. Consumers need to go into that store. Plus, as the department stores struggle, that creates opportunities.
All right. Let's move to Disney.
Yep.
Disney suffered a little bit in its latest earnings report. They're suffering from the cord-cutting situation. But you think that that provides opportunity?
Absolutely. In fact, we think this little pullback in Disney presents a little buying opportunity for investors. But Disney has the content that consumers want. What Disney's got to do, and we think Robert Iger, will do a great job figuring out how to deliver that content to consumers. Consumers still want their content. They're just not happy with those high cable bills. So Disney's just got to figure out a different distribution channel.
And you say Oracle basically has managed to conquer the cloud computing model that it put forward several years ago.
Absolutely. We've watched Oracle for several years. I mean, the stock really has been flat for about 3 years now. They finally figured out their cloud strategy. And as you heard with the report that you just gave earlier, companies are moving to the cloud. And you've got to have a cloud strategy. Oracle has a phenomenal strategy, and we really think they're poised for really good performance going forward.
On that note, John, thank you so much for joining us again. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
John Traynor with People's United Bank's Wealth Management. And coming up, sold, the man who won a bidding war and paid the highest price ever for a piece of work by an American artist. And here's a look at what to watch for next week. On Tuesday, as we mentioned, the White House will release its full budget for the 2018 fiscal year. On Wednesday, the Federal Reserve releases its minutes from the May meeting, where the committee decided to keep interest rates unchanged. On Thursdays, members of the OPEC oil cartel will meet to decide whether to extend a production cut deal. That's what to watch for next week. A record number of Americans have auto loans. According to data released this week by the New York Federal Reserve, 107 million Americans are financing their cars with loans. That's more than 40% of the adult population, and it's up from 80 million back in 2012. Car sales in 2016 hit an all-time high, and today the number of auto loans outpaces home loans, which means demand for gasoline. But it's been weaker than expected this year, but that is expected to change. The energy industry is expecting record demand this summer as the economy grows and gasoline prices remain relatively cheap. The U.S. gasoline market accounts for roughly 10% of the global oil consumption. Earlier this week, we told you about the art auctions happening in New York. We also told you that the sales were seen as a test of the health of the market. Tonight, we can tell you that sales exceeded expectations and that the art market is alive and well.
A painting by the 1980s artist Jean-Michel Basquiat sold for nearly $111 million last night at Sotheby's. That was nearly double the estimate and made it the most expensive painting ever sold by an American artist and the sixth most expensive painting ever sold at auction. The buyer was Yusaku Maezawa, the 41-year-old Japanese e-commerce billionaire who posed with his new trophy on Instagram, saying, quote, "When I first encountered this painting, I was struck so much with excitement and gratitude for my love of art." Now, the piece was sold in 1984 to a Long Island real estate developer for $19,000. The buying and bidding were strong throughout the week, with sales topping about $1.5 billion, up from just over $1 billion last year. Cy Twombly's Lita and the Swan went for nearly $53 million at Christie's. It's a sister painting to the famous piece at the Museum of Modern Art. This Francis Bacon triptych went for almost $52 million. But Basquiat is the new darling of the global art market. Christie's sold this one called La Jara, previously owned by hedge funder Steve Cohen, for $35 million. A total of 16 Basquiats were sold this week, totaling more than $200 million. Maezawa set the previous record for a Basquiat when he bought a piece for $57 million. He plans to open a museum in Japan. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Robert Frank.
Well, the up and down finished the week with a rally. The Dow advanced 141 points to 20,804. The Nasdaq was up 28 and the S&P 500 gained 16. And that will do it for Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you here Monday.